Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey, it's Sprague here. Really appreciate you listening. You're about to get some podcast excellence. It's presented by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Now you listen to me. I want details, and I want them right now. I don't have a job. I have no place to go. You're not in the mood? Well, you get in the mood!
This is Dirt and Sprague.
We try and teach our children not to make fun of others.
Mongoloid Mike, is that what you used to call him? He bust his head open with a stick. Remember that?
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
You think you're ready to run with the bulls?
I've been earning and burning, snapping necks, and cashing checks.
Look, Brendan, here's the thing. It's the Catalina wine mixer. Okay.
Ah! Are you saying pow? What are you saying?
Bah! Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
Hey, Luke, how come there's no ice in my lemonade? Sir. Drop down or you give me 10 now.
The Fan.
Hey, let's do this. Final hour. Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Lots to get to in the final hour. Including the Seahawks playing on Monday Night Football. Weekend couldn't have gotten any better for them. Rams lose. Cardinals lose. They get to take on the Eagles tonight.
Bucks lose, too.
Yeah. Good little weekend for them. But let's get back into Oregon and Oregon State, shall we? It's been dominated the first hour of the show. If you want to see me singing the Oregon State fight song, go check out the 1080 The Fan Instagram.
Or Facebook account.
Oh, it's on the Facebook as well.
Well, I guess when I post to Instagram on The Fan, it also links. Facebook does the same thing as Instagram.
Oh, okay.
So, but links they're also right owned up by the same company. But.
Nice. Go listen to my beautiful songbird voice. Yeah. Okay. Why are the officials so bad?
I don't know. Did you catch the hint of arrogant and like douchebaggery attitude of the lead official in that game?
From the first play of the game. First play.
Like the way he just talked and like he was yelling, all right, hold on. Yeah.
First play of the game, I got that
vibe. Offsides! And you're like, okay, why are you talking like that?
When they called that first personal foul on Oregon, when the defender kind of kneed him out of bounds and then he retaliated, I think it was Johnny Johnson, like, dude, it's a rivalry game. Really? We're flagging the reaction to that? I got a terrible sense that this is going to be a long night, and it was.
It wasn't a good feeling because I think anytime you get a Pac-12 ref, you're kind of going and going, well, how many calls are going to go against my team today?
Sure.
Hopefully it's at least an even dose, so we can't complain about that. But yeah, they were pretty awful. And look, it went both ways. I do not want to sit here and act like Oregon State got railroaded all night and Oregon got all the calls.
Did Diamador Lenore force the fumble? Because I thought he had it. I understand why it wasn't overturned.
I think it was a fumble, but I don't think you had enough visual evidence to conclude when he had clear possession.
Sure.
I text that to you. I'm like, pretty sure that was a good play.
Yeah.
But I don't think you have enough evidence to overturn it.
It was one of those calls on the field's going to stand kind of either way thing.
Right. But, you know, at the end of the game, too, with the offside situation, like.
Now, Oregon clearly jumped offside and didn't call it. And they were going to do it on every play because you were at the 1-inch yard line. So if you jump offsides, you're not giving any yards up there.
Well, you know, I think they need to change that in football.
Well, what's the. You give them like an automatic first down or something?
Well, I think you change the down and distance. Well, not the down. But then I think if you do it multiple times on the 1-inch line, I think at some point it should be like holding on the 1 yard line.
It's like an automatic touchdown.
But the offense gets a safety if you hold on the 1 yard line.
Sure.
If it's in the end zone,
yeah.
Right? So if you're jumping off sides just to do it, like at some point you should get a little punished.
Yeah.
I say
they
that
clearly
as a,
did it. They jumped offsides. Yeah. They didn't call it, and Oregon got the stop. And then they did it the next play, and it got called. But the ball was already an inch away from the goal line, so you can't move any closer than
that. I don't know how you're looking down the line of scrimmage. I don't care how far you are. How you look down the line of scrimmage and don't see that dude jump that much offsides and not throw a flag.
Well, and then even on top of that, the first one where Jevia got in and they had to go review it, it was like review after review after review. The ending of that game was just ridiculous. The first one, I think similarly for the Lenore fumble, like you couldn't tell where he had the football. We can all assume where the football was.
Right.
So that I thought was the tough part for the review. The issue there was, why are you not calling that a touchdown on the field? You have a line or a judge is literally down the line, just standing there, and he falls into the end zone.
Like and she still couldn't,
and she
like,
didn't
tell.
Call a touchdown. Like, that's
ridiculous.
Why are you not calling that on the field? And then you go back to review, and you've got to assume that he's got the ball in his chest, but you can't, you know, they said not enough, quote-unquote, video evidence, but the fact that that wasn't called on the field was just a joke. The ending of that game took a lot of steam out of what was a great back-and-forth game, and to be honest with you, it ended up hurting Oregon because they had to use multiple timeouts. It would have been better for them. And Cristobal, after the game, said he wasn't going to do it, which I question that decision-making because your defense sucks, FYI. Let them score and said they had to use basically all their timeouts, and it went all the way down to third or fourth down, and they finally put it in.
Well, I was wondering, too, were they going to do that? Do the Ole defense, let them score, give ourselves more time because we feel like our offense can push the ball on Oregon State's defense. I didn't get that. I was also a little confused on the timeout with the replay situation because Cristobal called the timeout. They reviewed it, the Lenore fumble.
Yeah.
And then they gifted him the timeout because they said it was a Booth-initiated review, which is fine.
Yeah.
But then later in the game, Oregon State lost a timeout, and Smith ran on the field.
Because they said he called it, but he never called a timeout.
But he never called it. And he was like, dude, I didn't call it.
And they had to switch it to them being Oregon's timeout. Because he was like, why would I call a timeout right there? I'm trying to run down the clock and score on the last play.
It was so idiotic.
Before any of the timeouts, we're going to a review.
Oh, man. And then, like, you could tell Oregon's coaches were shouting something at the lead official. And this guy, instead of wanting to deal with it, just turns the mic on. He's like, I got it. And then he makes the call. And I'm like, God, who is this guy?
You don't have it, man.
This guy has so much attitude as an official. I don't think you need this much.
Oh, it was a cluster of an ending.
It was a memorable look. No fans. It sucks. The season in general sucks. I think we can all agree with that. It was a very memorable Civil War for me.
Oh, you'll never forget that.
Or Oregon State game. It was very memorable. I'll always remember that. The fog, no fans, cardboard cutouts, the weird officiating in it. The whole deal I thought was going to be memorable.
Including the broadcasting. So we again were subjected to broadcasters sitting at home on ESPN. Dave Fleming and Rod Gilmore were calling it from their house. I have made my thoughts clear on Rod Gilmore over the years. I don't think he's a very good analyst. There's a handful of people that fall into that category. He's not the only one. But having those guys call the game at home just kind of added an extra element to it, where it felt like Gilmore had a line where he was trying to pronounce Kayvon Thibodeau's name, and then he just like gave up on the call.
What do you think happened there?
I don't know.
Because this is what it was.
He ended up calling him like Beetle or something.
Kayvon Thibodeau.
Yeah, and he just like,
what?
And then they're like, that was it. It was like, what were you trying to say there? What is happening?
You had all week to prepare for that game. You didn't see that name and go.
That's like the most recognizable name on Oregon's team. He was the number one player in the country.
Dirty, you know I'm bad with names. But if I was doing a play-by-play and I had like three or four Samoan names or Kayvon's name,
for sure,
I'm using all week and I'm like writing that out phonetically. I'm saying it over and over and over. Because you don't want to get to that moment.
Yeah.
And Rod Gilmore clearly just rolled out of his bed, put on a bathrobe, and was like, I got to go call a game, honey. I'll be back in 5 minutes.
Let's go, baby. And then they toss it down to Shelley Smith at the start of the game, and she tells a story about her niece getting hit in the head by a clump of ice or something at a past Oregon and Oregon State game. And then did we hear from her the rest of the game?
So she did two hits. The first hit she did, I don't know what was going on. She can say she was frozen. I swear to God there was gauze in her mouth or something because her mouth was half full.
There's something going on there.
And she's talking. She barely gets through it. Then the second time she tells the knee story.
But they tossed it to her one time and she didn't say anything.
Yeah, they didn't have.
They tried the third time and they said, it's not working.
We lost Shelly.
So they just gave up.
Did anybody check on her?
They flew her out here.
Yeah, why is she there?
to call the game
right.
as a sideline reporter, and she only did two hits for an entire game.
I think she lives in the area, so maybe that's why.
Oh, is she a local?
I believe. Well, she's had family that has gone to Oregon over the years.
Well, I just didn't know she lived here.
Yeah, I think that's somebody I'm sure knows the answer to that that's listening that can correct
she's
me.
She's normally fantastic.
Oh, Shelly Smith's great. We love Shelly Smith, but she looked frozen in that first one. Like, she couldn't talk, and then you just they did it to her, and there was no voice at the end of the second half. Like, well, what's happening, man?
I was really waiting for somebody to pull that hit and put it online. Like, you know, there's all these people that pull the video clips, like, worldwide wide.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought somebody for sure was going to pull that because that was the most out-of-left-field report I think has ever been done on sideline history. To tell a story
right.
about your niece almost being murdered by an icicle at a football game, but she learned a valuable lesson? What? Excuse me?
What are we doing here, Shelly?
She was hit in the head with ice, and Shelly Smith made a pun joke.
Yeah, we're just overlooking it, man, all right? It makes you stronger in life, okay? You learn your lessons the hard way. That was a wild game, and Sprague mentioned, I agree. It's one that we'll never forget between Oregon and Oregon State, and especially Oregon State fan because they got the win, their second. And what they lost 7 in a row, right? 1-16 and 3 more. So it didn't have to wait the 7 years this time to win it. And there was a lot of jubilation in Corvallis on Friday night. Let's get into the game and kind of what it means for both programs. We'll do that coming up next because we had a lot of thoughts rolling in. So we'll read some of yours, 503-250-1080. Where do Oregon and Oregon State go from here? And are there any grand takeaways outside of just one football game? We'll get to those coming up next on Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fam. Hey, Dirt and Sprague, sticking around here for BlueChew.com. You got a hard time taking pills? You're not alone. Get on BlueChew.com. If you love sex, you love BlueChew.com.
Yeah, and if you want a hard time, BlueChew.com will give you just that. They offer a performance enhancement for the bedroom. You don't have to be one of those guys that puts pride before. You don't need to do that. Take BlueChew.com. They have affiliated physicians that work with you to find the perfect dosage and active ingredient to get liftoff going for you and your significant other.
And no matter the time or day, you can take them on a full or empty stomach. That's always good news because you never know when the moment's going to strike. The online physician consult is free, so it's cheaper than the other brands, and it only takes a couple of minutes to get connected with a BlueChew.com affiliated physician. And if you qualify, you can get prescribed online quickly.
No in-person doctor visit, no awkward conversation, no waiting in line at a pharmacy. This is perfect, and we got a great deal for you. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first order free when you use the promo code 1080. Just pay $5 in shipping. It's close to Christmas. This is a great gift. That's BlueChew.com. Promo code 1080.
All right, well, change gears up coming up bottom of the hour. Is it a joke or the end of the world? Some tough news for Oregon State today, and that is the injury update on Tristan Jebbia. So he got hurt on that last attempted quarterback sneak that he had. They said he didn't get in. Chance Nolan came in and ended the game with his own quarterback sneak. Jonathan Smith said today that his injury was significantly more serious than we thought. But they said they're hopeful that he'll play Saturday against Utah, but that will depend on the results of further testing and treatment throughout the course of the week. So interesting messaging there. It's worse than what they thought it was post-game. He looked like he was in a ton of pain sitting on the sideline at a walk-off on crutches. Tough for him because he, you know, kind of led that comeback and didn't have the chance to put the exclamation point on it, if you will. But they're hopeful. Maybe he can play against Utah. We'll have to see how treatment goes. Does that change your mind at all about the rest of the season or the game against Utah if he's unable to go?
Well, first of all, hell of a start to a career for Chance Nolan. First snap is the go-ahead touchdown in your biggest rivalry game.
Yeah, he's one for one, man.
I think it has to. I think to suggest otherwise would be a little foolish. Sure, you trust Jonathan Smith and Brian Lindgren and the offensive line and Jamar Jefferson have been amazing this year, but Jebbia has been an up-and-down quarterback, and he beat out Chance Nolan in their lead into this season. So I think that tells you what the coaching staff thinks between these two individuals. It has to. You're going with a backup quarterback. If you were to go to Anthony Brown in Oregon,
yeah,
there'd be a little nerves there, right? You'd think, oh, well, this isn't a given. We don't know what this kid's going to be.
Sure.
Now, Brown's got more experience than Chance Nolan does, but I think any Oregon State fan that poo-poos that, I think that's ridiculous. I think you got to be a little concerned or at least wondering how effective can Chance Nolan be given we've seen Jebbia be up and down and he beat him out.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they go from here, because usually that rivalry game is the culmination of the season. It's like the last moment. So if you get that win, you're like riding off into the sunset. You just beat your rival, right? It's a great feeling going into the offseason or going into a bowl game potentially. And now, I mean, you got to rally it back up and go play Utah on Saturday night. Utah looked a lot better.
Utah looked way better.
Right? I mean, they didn't look good in week one, but a lot of rust in week one. They're still playing with limited quarterbacks themselves. I think they struggle at that position, but I think the rest of the roster has come into shape. So, I mean, that's just going to make it interesting how both these teams handle it. And the same thing goes for Oregon, because Oregon, for everything that we're criticizing them of, and we got some texts at that, I'll read them here in a moment, they still control their own destiny in the Pac-12 North. So can you get off the schneid? Because it's now back-to-back weeks that they've looked really bad. The first couple of weeks felt like they were playing with fire, and they ended up separating themselves, but they didn't play great football against Stanford or against Washington State. They ended up winning by a decent margin. Played with fire again against UCLA, very fortunate to win that game, and then you do lose to Oregon State after, again, not playing a very good game. So is this the get-off-the-mat moment? Is this what Oregon is? It's hard to expect where they're going to go from here, because I think Washington right now deserves at least attention as the best team in the North. And Cal, I know they're 0-3, but Cal has given Oregon some problems over the years, and there's still a lot of talent on that roster. So it's just going to be interesting, man. You usually get it the last week of the season, and now, hopefully, knock on wood, you got two more games left for each team.
Well, you know, from the Oregon angle, I look at it as, I'd imagine most Duck fans at the end of that game Saturday or Friday, you know, aside from the social media reaction and getting ribbed by other fan bases, I would imagine you kind of go, yeah, that felt right. Given what you saw against UCLA the week before, you know, just people had looked at these games and they, even the ones they won by double digits, Washington State, Stanford, there still wasn't this like, yeah, Oregon is this level. It was like, well, a little concerning. Now, I kind of poo-pooed that the first 2 weeks. You beat Stanford by double digits, you're always happy with that.
Sure.
And you beat Washington State by double digits on the road in cold conditions, be happy about that. The UCLA game was a head-scratching, eye-opening performance of, oh, God, this could get ugly. I still didn't subscribe to it. I thought Oregon would show up talent-wise. They'd play a much better clean game than they did the week prior, because I have a lot of respect for Andy Avalos. I think he's a very good defensive-minded guy. But what we've seen is the departures that of the players that they've lost clearly, and we'll see this in the draft. Javon Holland might be a top 10 pick. Graham might be a mid-round guy. I don't know about Brady Breeze. Maybe he'll get drafted higher than I think. But like those kind of departures impact you on a level that you go, ah, damn. But then you see them play and you go, whoa, okay, there's a huge difference here. And as great as Kayvon's been, Jordan Scott, you know he's
disappeared this year. I don't know where he's been.
He's only had a handful of plays. I don't get it. I don't get how bad their defensive line is to get pushed around the way they do.
Yeah.
While also seeing guys like Kayvon make huge plays throughout a game. He was chasing down Oregon State players all night, but yet you're running right through without any pushback. So I think if anything it did for Oregon fan was kind of just get you walking away going, I'm not shocked. That's the team I felt like I've been seeing, and it almost reared its ugly head last week, and it absolutely reared its ugly head this week.
Yeah, I think it's you're always going to have extremes on each side whenever, and it's funny to be, it's a good thing to have a program that's at a position where every time they lose a game, you feel the need to do like an autopsy, like what went wrong? Like that's a good thing, because not everybody gets to that point where every time you lose, you question everything from the top all the way down to the bottom. And especially against a rival, if you lose to UCLA and you beat Oregon State, maybe we're not doing the same thing, but you lose to your in-state rival, it's going to cause a little more self-reflection. I do think there's truth to both sides of this coin, because some fans are saying, you know, kind of doom and gloom what's happening. We had a listener text in saying, see, this is what you get with the CEO model coach Mario Cristobal. They coach circles around him late in that game. It's like, all right, Jonathan Smith had a good game. I'll give him credit for that. It's not necessarily his fault that they can't get a push up front on either side of the football late in the game. I think some of that is just the players that you're working with. But also at the same time, it's okay to question, why is this defense as bad? It doesn't make sense. Like, you have talent on that side of the ball. You're not going to be as good as you were last year, but there's no excuse to be this bad defensively. And a lot of it is just effort and intensity, in my opinion, and hustle. Like, DJ James, one of their young corners, had a tackle, for those who remember, late in the game. It was like one-on-one situation where they just basically hiked it and threw it to a wide receiver. It was like the worst tackling effort that I've ever seen in my life. The long touchdown run.
They do arm tackles. Right? They put their arms out and hope to hold on.
And I don't know, is it not having fans? Is it it being a weird year? Is it not getting to practice it? I don't know how to make sense of it, but it's been an issue all year. And to criticize them for not improving on that as the season goes on, completely fair. It's also fair to criticize Shuck for not getting better. Like, that he regressed this last week after I thought he played really well against UCLA and not turning the football over. But for all of those things that are true, it's also okay to admit the exact thing that we said about Oregon coming into the year, which was, sure, on paper, they should probably be the favorite to win the conference, but look what they're replacing. Like, you already, without the opt-outs, were replacing four starting offensive linemen, a top 10 NFL quarterback, your two leaders on defense and Dye and Lamar Winston. Like, that's not even counting anybody else. Juwan Johnson, who was your go-to guy late in the season. Like, that's already a lot to replace initially. Then you add the COVID on top of it, and you replace your two best players in Penei Sewell and Javon Holland, who are both going to be first-round NFL draft picks, who drastically changed the look of this roster, and a Rose Bowl MVP at safety, and a top three or four-round draft pick at corner in Thomas Graham. So I think it's okay to admit both. I find it funny that we say that going into a year, like, Oregon, it's kind of an uphill battle. They've lost a ton of talent. They might still end up winning the conference, and who knows, they maybe still will, but it's going to be tough with all their new faces, and then they lose a game, and it's like, oh, my God, what's wrong? It's like, We've identified what's wrong. They need to play better. There's no doubt, and I'm not letting them off the hook for being soft on defense and Shuck not looking the part necessarily. But both sides of that coin can be true.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people went into this year, Dirt, with the mentality. I know we did as a show of just be critical, but be careful of assuming this is what the future is what this season kind of plays out as because of the departures, because of the uncertainty and COVID situation. I think that's really tough to the listener that, you know, brought up the coaching thing. You know, Jonathan Smith at the end of that game, I do think the coaching staff outcoached Oregon's at the end of the game. But I think when you compliment an opposing coach, it doesn't always have to be a referendum against your coach to say that he's not X and X. Maybe he wasn't up to the exact same level as Jonathan Smith Friday night, and I think that's okay to admit. Jonathan Smith's a very good coach.
He's a damn good head coach.
But I think it's also easy to pump the brakes a little bit and say, well, he's also recruiting at a top five level, which if you want to win a national championship, all of the stats, all of the history says you have to be at a certain level of recruiting. You're just not going to do it at top 20, top 25 levels. It won't happen that way. You might win some Rose Bowls here and there. You have in the past. That's great. But if you want to win a national championship, you want to jump into the playoff convo, you got to be recruiting at the level he is. That's a huge part of coaching. It's recruiting, especially at college. And so I think you take that element, and then you also say they won the conference last year. They blew them out in the Pac-12 title game. They won the Rose Bowl. They can still win the conference this year. Again, one-on-one, sometimes you don't get the other guy will beat you, right? I'm watching Queen's Gambit. I just got done with that show. She doesn't win every time she plays. She ends up being the best damn chess player in the world at the end. It's okay. Sometimes you're not the better of your counterpart. And I think that's what took place Friday. Yeah. But that doesn't mean that Mario Cristobal suddenly doesn't know how to coach football. Doesn't mean the program's going to fall off a cliff now. Let's let them respond. And we'll evaluate the rest of what this year is. We'll probably look back and go, that year kind of sucked. And then next year will be even more the pressure cooker for him down in Eugene.
Yeah, somebody texted in and said, that's right, Dirt. That's why the preseason anointing of Oregon made no sense. They lost tons. And I agree with that. We said that all offseason for those that listened for the weeks leading up to the year. We said the only reason Oregon was picked to win the conference was because there was nobody else that had risen enough in the offseason to deserve that consideration. They went chalk. Oregon won it last year. Cristobal's back. Let's pick Oregon to win it.
You and I, this was basically our answer when we'd ask each other, who do you think the favorite of the Pac-12 is?
Oregon, I guess. Maybe Washington could win it, though. USC could win it.
Yeah,
Oregon State could have a good
Arizona
year.
Arizona State.
Cal is supposed to be a dark horse. Like, that's literally what we said all season, and so far it's bearing pretty true. But Oregon State gets the win, man. Give him credit. It's a big one for Jonathan Smith, and it's going to be interesting to see where both programs go the rest of the way, because it's not the last game of the regular season like it usually is. Oregon's got Cal this weekend. Yeah. Oregon State's got to go on the road to Utah, and I know they both want to finish strong from Oregon, getting back off the schneid after a loss there in Oregon State to you know, kind of rally through and carry the momentum to the next 2 weeks. Let's change it up a little bit. Is this the end of the world or is it a prank? We'll get to that next. All right, we'll close up with some Monday Night Football. Also, a request for something to happen in the league. But before we do, I do want to change this to be a shorter segment anyways. Have you guys followed these monoliths? Have you followed these stories?
I saw the one in Utah and I saw the latest one today, yes.
So they,
I didn't even know what that was until it popped up.
Yeah, I saw the one in Utah. Now the one in Utah is mysteriously gone.
It's disappeared.
It's disappeared. And
for those who don't know the story, there were guys flying around in choppers. I can't remember. It was some sort of
It was the Utah like agriculture team or something.
They were flying choppers in the middle of nowhere in Utah, and one of the guys in the helicopters looked down and saw this like shiny thing sticking out of the ground. He's like, "Whoa, hold on, what is that? Let's stop and go back and look at it." They did, and it's like this perfectly shaped monolith that's in the middle of the Utah desert, and they like had no clue what it was. They took pictures of it, and it ended up becoming this like flocking place. Like a bunch of people were showing up to go get their pictures taken with it and see it and all that kind of stuff. Well, it unexplained. Nobody knows why. It just vanished.
Yeah.
Nobody knows where it went.
We got a Banksy thing going on here or something.
Disappeared. Okay. Mm-hmm. Totally disappears. Nobody knows what the hell's going on. Then today, a very similar one shows up in the middle of nowhere in Romania.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like an identical thing. Now, it has like some, it looks like inscribing on the side of it or something. But it showed up in Romania today. So are we buying? Is this a prank? Is this an alien invasion? Is it the end of the world?
There's a hoax going on.
You think there's a hoax going on?
I've always long believed if we're getting an alien invasion, they're not sending warning signs that we can't figure out because they know they're smarter than us. They're just going to attack.
Well, the monolith is a tool that's used by the alien race to investigate worlds across the galaxy and encourage development of intelligent life.
Oh, are you reading that description on the QAnon message board?
No, it's actually the Daily Mail. Oh, thank you very much.
Okay, the Daily Mail. I think this is a group of 30 people from a Reddit stream or something that started emailing each other and said, dude, what if we put just like a piece of metal somewhere random and like they won't know? And I think they did it, and everybody's like, oh, my God, how did this get here? It's funny. When I saw the Utah one, everybody's like, how did it get way out here?
Yeah.
And then once it was discovered, people were all going out to take pictures with it. It's like, well, it seems like it's pretty accessible. Mm. If randos now are showing up at this location to go take photos with it, I think this is all big, like it's like the Wazoo flag. I think there's an email chain, and they figure out who's going to be waving it
all over the place
in the East Coast. Yeah. Hmm. What do you think? This is a deeper message
I'm
here.
I'm just saying.
Is this how they communicate? They've given up on cornfields.
They have. Yeah, the crop circles are done. Now they're putting monoliths all over the world.
By the way, have you ever noticed crop circles? Not a thing anymore.
Yeah, what happened to those?
I think that age of people that did like this
crop circles, they just stopped.
I think they got old.
I will say this: crop circles always blew my mind.
They were always really cool looking.
They were always like perfectly designed. Like, how did you plan that all out? If it's not aliens and it actually is a prank,
when you'd watch the TV shows,
that takes a lot of time and creativity.
And the TV shows would always have like one analyst, like, I've been examining corn my whole life, and there's no way you could bend the stalk this perfectly at this level. And you'd always be like, oh, okay.
There's no chance. So according to your theory, then, we're going to get more monoliths all over the world? Is this going to be like our new trend? Is the one in Romania going to disappear, and then we get one in like Mexico or something?
So like, what is it? A real life edition of the Tom Hanks... The next one, what is it? The Da Vinci Code and then Angels and Demons. And
yeah, the real life version
like
of it.
Four of those Da Vinci Codes, didn't they?
I mean, there was three. I know three of three. Them? I don't know if there was a four.
The Dan Brown books.
I saw the first one. I liked it. And the other was, okay. It's kind of turning into the same thing.
Yeah, it was spotted by the Bureau of Land Management folks in Utah. It was removed by an unknown party on Friday evening. It was about 12 feet from the Red Rocks in southern Utah. This one that they found in Romania is about 13 feet tall, and one side faces Mount Kile, known locally as the Holy Mountain.
Pretty sure you said that wrong.
Totally screwed that up. But yes, it faces what they consider the Holy Mountain in Romania, and it's 13 feet tall.
How wide are these things? They don't look that wide.
They look like 2 feet wide.
Yeah, about two feet. But two, you know, it's, I think they're, what, three-sided, right? And I think that they're about similar in height. I think they're saying they're both about 13 feet tall. Now, this one, if you've seen pictures of it, you can go, it has like scribblings on it.
Yeah, it does.
So the one in Utah looked like it was like perfectly shiny. This one has random scribblings on it. So who knows what kind of message the aliens are sending.
To which I'd say to the aliens or God, like, can you not send me subliminal messages? Could you just tell me what you want? You want to just take over the earth?
Well, hasn't 2020 been enough already?
Well, I know,
this is kind of it, right? Aren't we all waiting for the alien invasion in 2020? Now, have you guys ever read 2001: A Space Odyssey?
I never read it.
I never did either.
I read it a long time ago.
Because people are saying that this is like what popped up in the books. It was these monoliths that would show up. And that was in the book. Yeah, they used it to communicate and the coordinates around the world, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, this sounds like a coordinated situation that people are trying to act like something bigger is happening, and
so
it's not.
Okay. Some computer somewhere named Hal that's orchestrating all this. Is that what's going down?
Oh, man. I don't know.
Are you buying into the alien thing?
I'm just saying it's a little weird. They're showing up in the middle of nowhere. What are the chances that Romanians and people in Utah are communicating about monoliths?
I don't know. We say 2020 and it's weird and what else could happen? Nothing would surprise us. An alien visit would shock everybody.
Yeah, that would do it. That'd kind of be the cap off.
I wouldn't even know, do I go into work tomorrow, or does this stop that? Or
Yeah, what's the protocol there? Do we come in?
Does society just end when we see a big ship in the sky?
Yeah. Imagine, like, think about how panicked we got buying toilet paper during COVID. Like, imagine the panic
we're
we would
Space Force.
Have.
Let's
oh,
see
God.
That Space Force get out there and start working.
Yeah, seriously. That's the whole point of Space Force.
Well, what would be worse, though? An alien coming in with their flying saucers and just going, or going independence route where they come in and they basically just hover over our city for like 3 to 4 days.
Like an Independence Day kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly like Independence Day.
Yeah, just a giant ship right overhead. That would be far worse.
Because you don't know when
You don't know.
Yeah.
And you know it's coming. You know it's there.
And traffic's going to be bad.
You just don't know, yeah.
I think you're just driving in the middle of nowhere, and you're hoping that you survive.
Well, these monoliths are showing up in the middle of nowhere, so you might want to stay out of there. I'm just saying, keep an eye on it.
Before you go to break, that's just in from the Pac-12. Jamar Jefferson in a big shock here, offensive Pac-12 player of the week.
Shocking. Hey,
and your offensive lineman of the week, Nathan Eldridge from Oregon State, the redshirt senior.
Those the local
players to win.
Well-deserved.
Weekly honors from the Pac-12, that's just being released.
Is he going to get the Doak Walker? I know that Buffalo running back.
He's broke 406 yards.
For him.
Because of the shortage of games.
I don't know what Etienne's numbers look like for Clemson because they've played so many games.
Yeah.
The only thing that would keep him back is he's only going to get a chance to play 6 or 7 games.
Yeah, the Buffalo kid had 400 yards, so I'd have to check.
Well, he's had some other ridiculous games, too.
He almost broke their touchdown record. Ross Tucker, our buddy, was on the call of that game, like, losing his mind.
He had 8 touchdowns.
They took
tied the record.
And the coach didn't realize that he had 8, and then he needed more yards and another touchdown. And he was, like, screaming at the television. He was yelling at the offensive lineman to commit a holding penalty to, like, push him back 10 yards further so he can have an extra 10 yards of rushing. Like, what are you doing, man? Put him in the game!
Didn't Balazs at ASU have 8 touchdowns in a game?
I don't believe so. That's a lot of touchdowns. That's the all-time NCAA record. Did he?
Do you remember that game that I'm talking about?
I don't.
Kalen Balazs at ASU like 3 years ago?
Did he run them all or did he catch a couple of screen passes?
I don't remember.
Could have been total touchdowns.
Look it up.
All right, we'll Google that during the break.
He had an insane game. It was 6.
Okay, we'll look at most rushing touchdowns in a college game at college history. We'll close up, though, with a wish for the NFL and then Seattle.
Yeah, he had 8.
He had 8 in a game?
He tied the record. I remember that game.
How long ago was that? When was Kalen Balazs there? 5, 6 years ago?
2016.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to.
Hot damn.
Yeah, he had.
I don't
8.
Remember that.
I do, because they kept getting to the 1, and then they just hand him the ball, and he had multiple 1-yard touchdown runs.
Oh, he almost broke the record in Buffalo this weekend, but the coach took him out in the last chance, and he only ended with 8. Could have got 9. We'll close up Monday Night Football and a wish for the NFL next on The Fan. Well, the next domino in this Pittsburgh-Baltimore thing, the Washington football team versus Pittsburgh, which was scheduled to be played Sunday, is now being moved one day to Monday. So the Steelers are now going to have to play, through no fault of their own, Wednesday and Monday. And then play again the following Sunday, I'm assuming. So that's where the NFL's at.
This is such a mess.
Yeah, it is. We'll see if Baltimore-Pittsburgh even ends up happening on Wednesday, but it has been rescheduled.
We have to worry about the postseason.
Yeah, of what's going to happen. There's no doubt about it. That's been the biggest fear all along, is what happens when you get to that point if you have a team that's unable to go that week, because you can't force every other team to sit at home for 2 weeks.
Right.
Right, or a week.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just going to be brutal. Imagine getting to the big point in the NFL season in, like, Kansas City hosting an AFC title game and Patrick Mahomes not being able to play. That's a reality, right? Like, you already have injuries, so I get it. It's already somewhat a part of the game.
Don't you think at that, I said this about the NBA, like, and it was a hypothetical, but if they got to a game seven, Giannis and LeBron.
You just put it all on hold?
I do think the NBA would have done something because you just can't have that situation with either of those players. I think the NFL would do the same thing. You're telling me if Patrick Mahomes, the AFC Championship game, they're going to play even if he tests positive 2 days before?
Matt Moore still their backup?
I think he's the backup.
Let's go, Matt. Step on up, buddy.
I mean,
it's go time, yo.
I can't fathom the NFL doing that.
Yeah, it's going to be. I hope it doesn't come to that, but the virus is not going anywhere. So it's going to continue to affect seasons. The NBA, in fact, just came out with their. They had like 190-page thing for teams, and basically it's like, good luck. We'll see how this goes.
Swag, do we know yet if we're going to be allowed to go to those games, or is that still an uncertain thing?
Which game, sorry?
The NBA.
I haven't reached out yet. I've been trying to figure out how the college basketball season's here working. So that's what I've been doing the last week. But I haven't seen an official announcement. I mean, we saw the preseason games for the Blazers get announced. So
and they play the first nationally televised game, by the way.
Yeah,
preseason. Their game against like the Kings, I think, is the first one that's going to air on ESPN.
So I'll have to dig into that after getting through tonight's game.
Woo-hoo!
Over the Child Center. Should be fun. Some women's hoops. The new look for the Lady Ducks or the Women's Ducks team, which has totally reinvented itself. Mm-hmm. Still ranked number 10 in the country, even though they got a whole new crop of some transfers, five new freshmen, and a couple of ladies who were injured the last couple of years who are now healthy and ready to go. So, and then the Pilots coming off their WCC tournament victory last year and should be good.
Did you just work in like a plug for your other job?
It's professional, isn't it?
I just asked an NBA question and we're getting a plug for the game.
Yeah. By the way, the Pilots, they're taking on the Ducks tonight. Lady Pilots over on 910. We will get to Monday Night Football in a moment. I did want to bring this up. So I thought the 49ers, we didn't talk much about this game. They beat the Rams, the 49ers did yesterday. And over the last 2 years now, Kyle Shanahan is 4-0 against Sean McVay.
Owning Sean McVay, yeah.
Interesting trend. My first thought after watching that game was, because the Niners looked a lot better. They got Sherman's back, Mostert's back, Debo Samuel's back. Like, they're getting a little healthier.
Debo made his presence felt.
He is an absolute beast. He changes everything they do offensively. And there's some guys that are done for the year that aren't coming back. But you just see, when they get some of those pieces, they look like a much different football team. My thought watching that game was, God, I hope to see at some point Kyle Shanahan as a head coach with a legit quarterback. Just to see what they're capable of, right? Like his mind, and I know he's had his issues in big games and kind of, you know, coming up short and changing his game plan. And we've criticized him for that a lot. Just watching like them win a game with Nick Mullins, I'm just thinking to myself, give him Aaron Rodgers and just see what could happen. There was a rumor that came out today. This is from Mike Sando. And he's saying like a random offensive coach in the NFL told him this. But he is saying that the move that they should make, and he think that the team would be willing to do it, would be to make a move for Matt Stafford. That the Lions just fired their GM, they fired their coach, he's been around a long time, and he's 33 years old, they're ready to, you know, maybe it's time for them to move on and draft a guy and make a play for Matt Stafford.
Is that going to do it for him?
I don't know, but it piqued my interest of what he could do in a competent organization.
No, yeah.
With talent around him.
I'm with you there. He's kind of been one of those guys that's fallen victim to being a Lions quarterback. You know, I hope they get a quarterback too. I'm with you, like, their offense with a reliable quarterback, and give Jimmy G this. He was that for them last year.
He had some big
moments. The New Orleans game was one of his better moments, and they got to the Super Bowl with him. But it appears that is kind of rearing its ugly head. He can't stay healthy.
Yeah.
His on-the-field production, he just doesn't have it. And it appears that the Shanahan trust has kind of lost a little bit.
Well, they have an out on the contract after this year, too. So if they want to get out, they can.
I think they're going to be a lot like the Bears. And I hope that I'm wrong on this, but they're going to strike me as... Deshaun Watson was sitting there. Mahomes was more of a stretch. Remember, going into that draft, nobody was hyping him up to the level of, this is going to be the best player in this draft. People liked the potential he had, the big arm, the big playability, but we didn't know what he'd be. He landed in the perfect spot. Deshaun Watson was available, and they chose to go Solomon Thomas. So he's had his chance to go get a quarterback, and him and John Lynch kind of overlooked it and said, oh, let's go draft another defensive lineman.
This is very
Imagine Deshaun Watson in that offense.
Right?
That's terrifying.
It is. I was thinking that watching them yesterday of like, God, this, you can tell that the outline is there, and they got to a Super Bowl with the, you know, an average quarterback last year in Jimmy Garoppolo.
Well, and you know, I think they're one of many organizations, but the one thing I'd say about them is beating the Rams four times in a row, especially yesterday. I thought the Rams were going to be able to open a bottle on them.
That's a tough loss for the Rams who are trying to win the division.
They're just so well coached, and I know they'll lose their D coordinator here soon.
Yeah, Saleh's going to be gone.
But they're so well coached that they're never, they don't appear to ever be in a situation where even if there's a little uncertainty, every week is a blowout. They're not that kind of team.
Yeah.
If anything, they're going to get more wins than you expect or have those random upsets. You're like, ah, damn, I didn't see that coming.
They're still alive in the playoff picture. Don't overlook them. It's going to be an uphill battle because of the division they're in. They still got to play Seattle and Arizona again. But I think they're only a game or two out of the wild card race. And if you get that triggered expansion to the playoffs where you go to eight, I think they might even be in right now.
When you beat Arizona in your
or maybe
next...
Chicago's right there. But they're just right in that mix with like Chicago and Minnesota.
You beat them to beat Chicago, though.
Oh, for sure I would, yeah. So I just thought that was interesting. Monday Night Football tonight. Seattle is on the road at Philly. You can hear the game right here on the Fan. Pre-game show coming up in 5 minutes. But Seattle going to win this one going away?
I don't know. I think they will. I'm going to take them with the points. I have no idea what Philly's doing at quarterback, if it's Jalen Hurts or if it's Carson Wentz, but to me it doesn't matter. Doug Peterson looks a little over his head. They're getting Carson, they're getting Griffin back. This is a moment for them. They've done really well against Philly, so I'm gonna take Seattle and Russell Wilson here.
Big one in the NFC playoff picture, big one in the NFC West race, and as Sprague mentioned, we'll keep an eye on how many snaps Jalen Hurts ends up playing, because he's supposed to get more tonight against Seattle. Maybe taking Carson Wentz out of the rotation a bit. If you miss any of the show, Les Schwab Tires Podcast, 1080thefan.com is where you can find it. Thanks for being a part of our Monday, everybody. We'll talk to you tomorrow at noon. Number one's next. You are listening to Seattle pregame next. You're listening to 1080 The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.